that you're gonna regret.
But if you wanna stay in shape, well, you better hit the
Chimwits, Chimwits.
That's right, man.
Welcome to the Chimwits Podcast. I'm Justin Guild, a.k.a. Chef Sonic.
And I'm Tony Marinucci, a.k.a. Tips with Tony, your registered dietitian.
And we are the Chimwits. Yes, as you guys might have immediately noticed, Ryan is absent. He has a job that he has to get to, so we are going to proceed without him. But we do have some very interesting topics on board for today. Tony, I understand that you have an interesting study that you want to discuss with us.
Yeah, so it's not so much a study, but a movement. And I recently read about it. It's called the Blue Zone Project. And what they did was they basically looked at all of the different local communities, but from all over the world, not just in the United States, all over the world, and basically studied all of the people who lived to be over 100. And they basically adapted the concepts that these people, a majority of them, followed. So everything from eating more plant-based foods to having a purpose in life to purposely making time for exercise. And there was a list of basically the Power 9 principles, they called it. And what they're doing now is they're starting to incorporate, it's called the Blue Zone Project, in the United States. And they've been doing it in about, 34 different cities. And in those cities, they're finding that these people are having significant weight loss. They're actually more likely to eat fruits and vegetables. And with it is a movement to, even in the supermarkets, improve the signage of where the healthy items are. The restaurants are offering multiple healthier options. So it's these communities are really taking on this project and implementing that overall healthy lifestyle. So, and the feedback has been amazing. It's really cool.
I mean, it sounds fantastic. So when you say communities, is it a governmental thing in towns, or just people sort of banding together to do this? Who's sort of heading this operation?
So there was one person in particular that started it, and forgive me, I forgot his name. And then it's becoming more of a local officials have decided to adopt the practice.
So it is a sort of governmental.
Yeah, but it's actually something I read about it in a dietitian magazine. Basically, the reason why the dietitian wrote about it is because she's taking it on and making it a project for herself. Something I would love to, one day when I have more time and to really focus on the community aspect, I would love to do, start and get on the board of something to incorporate that in my local community and see if there's an impact.
So what are these Power 9 principles?
So the Power 9 principles, believe it or not, they don't just incorporate food, but it's also mental stuff.
Sure, sure.
Because, with health is more than just physical, but mental health and mental illness and all
mental
that stuff
health,
is
spiritual health.
Yeah,
sure.
It's all important. But the number, it's not in any particular order, but the 9 principles, one of them is just moving naturally. So incorporating physical activity into your daily living. And it might not be, they took this from a study of people that are over 100 years old. So it's not that they're doing Zumba or anything
Sure.
But they might just, do take the stairs instead of the
Clearly
elevator.
People are active.
They're just active.
In one way
they
or another.
Move more. Yeah. Number two is they have a purpose or identity in their life. So they're probably happy because they have a cause, something to kind of a reason to get up in the morning,
It's almost of a spiritual sense.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Some of them, all the way down the list, there's one about participating in a faith-based organization. So once again, they're part of something. I think that's more the takeaway from it is to be part of a group, something that kind of keeps you on a path or makes you feel like you have a belonging and a purpose.
Do you think any of these people that are over 100 are in a satanic cult? Because that would be a faith-based organization.
I doubt it, but I don't know.
I live over 100 because I'm in a satanic cult.
Yeah, I don't think so.
No offense
I don't think,
to anyone who's in a satanic cult.
Yeah. I don't think there's a lot of people that... I mean, I don't know. I don't want to get into that. Anyways, one of the other principles is finding strategies to help shed stress. So there are obviously people that, didn't live a very... Or maybe they chose to, as they got older, to eliminate stress from their life.
No, stress is a killer.
Yeah. Sure. One was the 80% rule. So it's basically eating mindfully and stopping when you're 80% full, which is really interesting. And I think it goes to say that kind of all foods fit, but don't eat past, the point of feeling completely full, and also don't not eat at all because you need to maintain a healthy weight, especially as you get older.
All right. Well, I love the principle of not eating till you're full, right? Of just eating till you're good and that's it. But just a question for in a sort of doing a survey or trying to calculate numbers, how would... were these people thinking of the 80% rule? They were just thinking, no, I just can be and eat normally. And then the people instituting the almost these power nines, they called it.
They call it exactly that. Yeah. It's basically, like I said, they kind of just assessed the people who lived over 100 and assessed like their daily life. I don't even know if it was like a questionnaire. It was
like an estimate of sorts.
Yeah. So then they basically adopted these principles based off of the way they lived their life.
Whatever you want to call it. I guess it's semantics, right? Just don't eat till you're stuffed all the time.
And don't eat till you you need to eat too.
Eat the right amount as you get older. Till you're good. Eat the right amount till you feel normal. Yep.
Yep. And actually, one of the other principles was a more plant-based diet.
Sure.
So, makes sense. If you're eating lots of fruits and veggies and whole grains, you're going to have all those antioxidants that defend disease. So you'll probably have a higher quality life.
And that means also you're probably not eating, because you're eating that to partially fill you up, you're not eating some of the other junk.
Right. The 20% it would be, and that's not going to contribute to most health conditions. So this one's a fun one. This one is, if you have a healthy relationship with alcohol, enjoy it in moderation with food and friends. And it's moderate
alcohol.
Yeah. So, and the American Heart Association does recommend for females, women over the age of 21, that it is heart healthy or beneficial to have one serving of alcohol per day, but no more than like 7 for the whole week. You know, if you have it every day, that's fine, but it needs to obviously be within, you know, the actual portion size. Yeah, so that's 5 ounces of wine, 1.5 ounces of vodka or like a hard liquor, or 12 ounces of beer, and no more than that. And that can be heart healthy. Also probably helps with a little bit with stress management. If you're not a drinker, there's other ways, but that is something to help. And then with males, it's those 2 servings a day. And obviously it's a little bit dependent on like height and weight and all that stuff. But the idea is like you're enjoying your life and like helping you de-stress, having something that's beneficial for the heart, but also not overindulging once again.
So does that mean if you want to drink a little bit more, that you can not do servings for one day and just say, I'm going to binge and drink 7 servings?
Exactly. Yeah. It's at one time.
It doesn't mean binging. It means a little bit at a time, but you can't, no binging. Binging
is not
real
bad,
right?
Because you didn't have your 2 yesterday, you can have 4 today. But yeah, that's why it's always tricky when it comes to alcohol, because there are those benefits to it.
Sure.
In some cases, but there's other ways to be healthy if you're not a drinker. And I also, you know, too much alcohol actually causes stress, and there's a lot of things behind terrible things that in excess. So, you know, it's one of, and also too, like, what are you mixing it with? And that can be a whole other topic.
Sure.
But yeah, so that was one. Loved ones first, making family a priority. Thought that was really interesting. And then once again, I think it has to do with that belonging or that purpose.
Sure.
Whether you are, you know, you have family or maybe just friends, just making sure that you make time for those people. Because, you know, as you get older, you might get lonely. And if you allow yourself to not be a part of that community and sit in that, you're probably more at risk or less likely to get the help you really need to sustain that lifestyle. And then the right tribe, surround yourself with people who support healthful behaviors. So the reason why I wanted to talk about this today was because when you look at the study or the movement, it's all about that community aspect, and it's about who you surround yourself with. And I think a lot of people have trouble with committing to that healthy lifestyle because maybe their family or friends are not on that similar path that they are. And they find it very difficult because they always have temptations and people may be tugging them in the wrong direction. So I really encourage everyone to get, like we've always talked about, get your goals and clearly defined and decide what you want. And then hopefully that will lead you to surrounding yourself with people that support you in those decisions.
Nice.
So those are the 9 principles.
So
and the Blue Zone Project, that maybe when I retire. Maybe not too far along down the line, I'll take on a project like that.
They all sound like great principles, and it makes sense that by following them, it might helped to lead to a long life. Now, I'm sure that with people over 100, there might be a little bit of luck. They might have lucked out with some genetics.
Absolutely,
and they just
yeah.
avoided certain things. But all these things, you know, these principles also play into it. Are there any things that you would like to add to the list, if you said things that would really help to live long? I have a couple.
Sure. I mean, thinking about it right off the top of my head.
Well, there's one sort of obvious one.
What's that one
and
for
that's,
you?
That's actual exercise. Now, I know they discussed activity, but I feel that exercise, we've discussed on the Gym Wits how activity and exercise are two different things.
Yes.
And how activity is extremely important, but exercise is also important. So yes. I think that exercise certainly would add a lot for, you know, for various reasons. You know, even lifting light weights would lead to helping bone density, keeping your bones stronger, you know, muscles, you know, not losing muscle mass, stuff like that. So certainly exercise. The other one that I would mention is to not smoke.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that anything like, same thing, excess alcohol, smoking or drugs, that's kind of like, I would hope is a given. You know, if you're doing anything that's either illegal or substance abuse, that's obviously not going to promote a healthy lifestyle. Yeah, I don't know. Right off the top of my head, I think of water.
Ah, yes. Yeah. For
John
sure. Staying
hydrated.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Once again, seems obvious, but bet you if you asked a lot of people, are you drinking enough water? They probably couldn't tell you. And if you actually looked at whether, you know, looked at their body makeup, are they drinking enough? I bet you a lot of people are not.
No, usually they're not. People are usually surprised when I come into my office or I talk with them over the phone. I'm helping with them with their diet. And, you know, I ask if, you know, how much water they drink daily. And as we start to explore, I start to find out that they think their first reaction is, oh, I drink plenty. So I ask them further, you know, do you count by the water bottles you drink? Do you count by the glasses you drink? If you could give an estimate, if you were to put it in water bottles, how many would that be? And they'll usually be like, oh, about two. But then when you calculate their height and their weight, they need a lot more than two water bottles, even if it's like the 16-ounce Poland Spring. So it's really interesting as you kind of dig a little deeper and think you get to see what people think is adequate and what actually is adequate. And then you get to educate them, which is always fun.
All right. So now on to the, I guess, main part of the podcast, even though that certainly was a really fascinating, I guess, study or survey or whatever they were doing, just the whole concept of it, I think is fantastic. And I'm sure if more people did it, we might have a healthier country.
Yeah, definitely.
But we're going to talk about metabolism today, which is a pretty in topic. A lot of people are talking about it. I guess they have been for years, but there's always new information and there's new things coming up. I'm sure there's a lot of misinformation as well. Mm-hmm. So first, what is metabolism?
Well, metabolism is the way that you burn calories every day. We have what's called your basal metabolic rate or your resting metabolic rate. And your basic metabolism is what helps on the cellular level, like on the inside, the way that you need to like just blink your eyes and just have normal like GI function and be able to not even walk really, just to be able to sit up in bed. Like that's your literal basal metabolic rate. And I think the reason why I wanted to talk about metabolism today is because people are always looking to improve it for certain reasons. One, they might be trying to lose weight. They might be trying to cut weight. They might be stuck at weight maintenance and they can't understand why they're not losing any more weight. So I wanted to explore that a little bit further.
So how do you calculate this basal metabolic rate? Is it some type of herb, like basil the herb?
No, there's no herb. They have the fancy machines that if you were in a clinical setting, you could get hooked up to a machine. And it's called indirect calorimetry. And basically it's a technique that it measures the way that you breathe in oxygen and breathe out CO2. And that basically is a non-invasive way of telling you what your calorie needs are by just laying in the bed, like I said before. And then what you account for after that is if there's any other physical activity and usually add calories to that. So now not everybody has that machine. So what I do as a dietitian, most dietitians will use, there's two different type of equations that studies show tend to be the most accurate, which is the Harris-Benedict equation or the Mifflin-St. George equation. And those equations account for age, height, weight and then your activity level. So you basically kind of plug it in, and there's a, you know, this plus this times this equals this. And it helps you to get, once again, an estimate of your calorie needs. So the indirect calorimetry is a little bit more accurate, but the Harris Benedict and Mifflin St. George is pretty accurate. The issue becomes when a person reports to you and thinks they're physically active, and you then explore and find out, well, is that really physically active? You know, and then you have to make that clinical judgment and adjust that way. But once again, like anything, I mean, I think people, unless they are competing and they are a bodybuilder in that setting, you know, and really are trying to get to a, or maybe a wrestler, for example, and they have to get to a specific body fat percentage and a specific weight, you know, or like an Olympic athlete that might have to weigh their food and all that stuff. That's when it becomes, you know, they'll have those machines and it becomes necessary to really understand their actual basal metabolic rate. But for the everyday individual, I just think it's a good way to have some guidance. And so, you know, maybe you think that your basal metabolic rate is, say, 1300, but it's actually 1200. And that's why you're not losing weight by only consuming that 1800 calories a day or whatever it, whatever have you.
So, hear it all the time through either exercise equipment, some foods, supplements, this or that. It says, oh, you're going to increase your metabolism. What is the deal with increasing your metabolism? How do you increase your metabolism? Like, does it, are there magic pills that you can take? You know, everyone says that when you, if you add muscle, it increases metabolism. But so what's the real deal with increasing your metabolism?
Yeah. I mean, well, one way is, you know, physical activity and specifically muscle building, because muscle really does burn more calories than fat does.
A brief question about calories. Could you very briefly explain what they really are? I think people don't really understand what calories are.
Good question. Calories are, the kcal is the unit for energy. So it's the way
actual
that,
measurement.
So it's a measurement. So
is that measured in joules?
Kcals or kilojoules. There's yeah, but they use kcals. Yeah, no, that's a good point. But we use kcals in America. I don't know what they do in yeah, I know we had a lot of other listeners from outside of the United States. So
basically, like, our body is a furnace, and the calories are like the is the coal or whatever that it's burning. Is that a good analogy?
That's a good analogy.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like, once again, we need a certain amount of calories just to sustain basic life, and then we need additional calories to support our activity level. And calories is, once again, a term for energy. Now, you can get that through protein, you can get that through fat, or you can get that through carbohydrates. Now, this is a total, like, different nutrition lesson, but the idea is that that carbohydrates have 4 calories per gram, protein has 4 calories per gram, fat has 9 calories per gram, and then alcohol has 7 calories per gram. So when calculating someone's calorie needs, that's where the breakdown and composition of calories to protein and to fat are all important to consider, because the way that it's broken down is the way that ultimately is going to add up to your total calorie needs. So,
all right. So back to how we increase our metabolism.
So, okay. So increasing metabolism, since you mentioned exercise and muscle mass, we can talk about that. It really is true that the more muscle that you have, your basal metabolic rate will go up. Without doing anything alone, but just sitting there, if you have more muscle, you will burn more fat and more calories. So if it's really, it's actually, when you think about it, most men naturally have a higher basal metabolic rate than women, because naturally their body composition tends to be more muscle versus fat. If you think about the why, it's because women need fat to carry it for menstruation, to carry babies. It's the way that we are built naturally. So that's why increasing, you know, doing more muscle bearing exercises, obviously if cleared by a physician, is something that you will help. And now, not everyone's able to lift weights, maybe due to injury, but it's just that muscle resistance. So even something like yoga, but if you're staying in like that plank position or something like that, you know, anything that eventually is going to just build that muscle can help. So it doesn't necessarily have to be lifting weights, but it has to be something that's going against resistance. And on a regular basis, I would say about 2 to 3 times a week to increase your muscle. Because, side note, after the age of like 40 for women and I think 50 for men, but in general, I would say after the age of 40, your muscle mass starts to deplete unless you sustained physical activity. So you basically have the opportunity up until the age about 40 to build that muscle up. And then after that, you can't really stop it from going down. You can keep it from maintenance, but there's no possible way that you can actually get the muscle, like to the cellular level, that muscle up after the age of like 40 or 50, which is pretty interesting. So I don't think a lot of people know that, which is why forming healthy habits early on is really important. And to put you at a less risk for like osteoporosis and those things that usually are associated with brittle bones and all of those things. So
we always say those workouts now are money in your health bank.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So definitely think about
that. Worth the time and investment for sure.
So now, what about food? Often hear that food or maybe supplements can increase your metabolism. Maybe if you eat this, it'll increase your metabolism. Does it really work that way?
Believe it or not, there's a lot of new research supporting certain foods. So people ask me a lot, is it calories in, calories out? Is it the food that you eat? And the answer is both. Like, I hate, unfortunately, with nutrition and dietetics, it's not black and white. It's never black and white. There's so many gray areas. So really, you know, at the end of the day, it is calories in, calories out. Obviously, the way in which you're going to achieve that is going to be different. If you're eating, it's going to be easier if you're eating the foods that your body needs, right? And the foods that have fruits and vegetables and whole grains and fiber that keep you full so it can stop you from, you know, overeating. But on recent studies type of level, I guess you could say, recent studies are actually showing that whole grains, not only that when you eat whole grains, so let me just give you a little lesson about whole grains. So from the dietitian perspective, personally, I don't know if there's other dietitians listening, but from a dietitian perspective, you know, we always recommend whole grains because of the dietary fiber. Dietary fiber is what naturally is in those whole grains, things like brown rice, whole wheat pasta, quinoa, you know, in comparison to the refined carbohydrates like white rice or white pasta or white bread, right? Dietitians will usually recommend the whole grain because of the fiber, thinking that the fiber is what keeps you full, therefore you'll eat less. So even if you have a piece of bread that's 120 calories of whole grain bread, it's still a better alternative than a 50 calorie white slice of bread, because the dietary fiber will keep you full, therefore you'll end up eating less. But new studies are actually showing that the whole grain itself plays on your metabolism on a cellular level. And there's studies supporting that people who eat more whole grains actually burn. They find, like, when they look at the stool, that the calories were not utilized they were utilized for what it needed. And then the rest was excreted up to about 100 calories per cake. I think it's 100 calories per gram or whatever they can't be 100 calories per gram because it's 4 calories. But I think it's like 100 calories per serving of whatever the whole grain was. I have to go back to the study specifically. But it's really, really interesting that almost like when you give the body what it needs, it recognizes what to use and what to excrete. Yeah. So it's really sort of interesting. And I think it opens up a whole lot of other spectrum of new research that's going to come from it. So I thought that was a really interesting study.
That is. What about supplements? I've heard that things like cacao powder or caffeine or any of those other things that you might find in an energy drink. What do you think? Do you think any of those things affect your metabolism?
So I think we spoke about this last time. Like with supplements, you want to be cautious because the FDA doesn't regulate them unless something bad happens. So be careful with supplements. From a caffeine standpoint, caffeine actually does, it speeds up the digestion process. So basically, with that, you might have more frequent bowel movements, and through moving, the importance of having normal bowel movements is because through that process, your body is taking the junk, pretty much. Things like dietary fiber, what it does is it pulls cholesterol out of the blood and then it's excreted, right? So caffeine basically helps you with those GI movements. It helps moving the metabolism a little bit. And there are studies that kind of show that it decreases satiety. Increases satiety. So make you feeling full. But I haven't came across any specific studies that show it actually has a direct effect on metabolism. So I think it's the other processes that take place when you have those supplements. And yeah, and then all the other supplements, to be honest, I haven't gone in great detail and studied them. But the FDA, all I know is if it's not around for a while, I don't really even take time to look into it, because there's so many things that are constantly coming out and new on the market. And I just would always caution and warn my clients to, you know, if it hasn't been around enough long enough to test it, I probably wouldn't add it. And I always add with, there's no magic pill, because if there was, I wouldn't have a job.
Yeah. No, exactly. So when you hear things like, oh, it revs your metabolism, that just sounds like a nice marketing ploy.
Yeah, that's the thing. There's no protected regulations of what they can claim and what they can say. It really is a free-for-all in the supplement industry. Hmm. So, you know, you mentioned cocoa powder. I mean, it's great for you. It's a good thing to add to the diet. So I don't think it would hurt, but you have to be careful with supplements because they're usually in concentrated form. So it's recommended and safe to consume cocoa powder as cocoa powder, like sprinkling it on your cereal or putting it in a smoothie. But to have a supplement form, very similar to things like turmeric and ginger, they're great to cook with and spices to add. But when you have it in that supplementation form, there's no doses to say you get what's called the upper limits that can cause things like nausea, vomiting, diarrhea. And normally with a healthy individual, it's probably okay. But then you have to think about like the cardiac population or people with diabetes that are on other medications and those interactions that the supplements can have with those. Mm. So, you know, once again, it's hard to say we have such a large audience that we speak with. I don't know who exactly is listening, but I try to kind of cover all bases with those answers.
All right. So now what about dieting? Can dieting negatively impact your metabolism?
Yeah. So one thing I actually want to talk about was something else I found in my research, which was super, super interesting, which is so new. And we definitely will have another podcast just about this alone. But there's a lot of new research studying the microbiome, which is basically the bacteria in our stomach. Okay. Mm. Now, the bacteria in our stomach, there's good bacteria and then there's bad bacteria. You obviously want to have a proportion of good bacteria more than the bad bacteria, but there's all reasons why it's there and it's functioning. So someone who has a healthy diet usually has more of those good bugs, what we call them, dietitians call them good bugs. Then you have people that have had a lot of high fat, high sugar, maybe high salt, poor eating habits. There, when you look, usually the studies are usually an obese population, which usually is associated with poor diet intake. So they've looked at the obese population and found that they don't have as many of those good bugs. Now, the reason why I'm talking about this is because they've also studied people that are like extreme dieters, and then even at the anorexic nervosa population, who actually aren't even eating enough, and found that they too have less of those good bugs. Now, the reason I'm talking about it is because there's more research showing that if we don't have a lot of those good bugs in our stomach, our metabolism is slowed down significantly. So the reason why I'm bringing that up is because someone who has basically dieted their whole life have probably done the low carbohydrate diets, then the high protein diets, then the high fat diets, then the maybe fasting diets, then the diets they created on their own, and just this whole lack of basically this inconsistency. And then what does that lead to? That binging of that high fat, high sugar, high salt diets. And once again, this is more of just my opinion on that, but the studies are showing that those big dieters, people actually that aren't eating enough, just basically poor eating habits, are showing that low bacteria in their microbiome, which directly affects metabolism. So the more good bugs you have in your belly, the more it's doing its job and helping with digestion and speeding up the basic metabolic rate.
Sort of ironic that people who have been dieting their whole lives and trying to lose weight or trying to be healthier have actually sort of messed up their metabolism by having poor eating habits. So they're actually hurting themselves. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Did you hear about, they did a study also on like the Biggest Losers from, you know, the show. I don't know if we're allowed to talk about like, you know, big TV shows. Sure. Basically, that show, there's a show where people lose extreme amounts of weight and by doing it by barely eating and exercising excessively. You know that. Yeah. Do you ever see the show?
Sure, of course.
So they just recently studied 6 years after to seeing if they kept the weight off. And only one of them actually did.
I believe it.
And all the rest gained at least 88% of their weight back.
Of course.
But the reason behind it is
a television show.
Yeah, but and then
doing extreme measures for entertainment. They don't care if they affect the people on the show negatively. And they're doing it with a veil of we're trying to help these people. No, they're doing it for a veil of let's get ratings. It's kind of exploitative.
It's sad because I think they do have their genuine interest at heart, but I don't think, once again, they explore the actual long-term effects to that.
And we know why, because gradual weight loss that will last is not sexy, and it's not fast, it's not cool, it's not snazzy, it's not something easily sold, it's not something where Jillian Michaels can go on and be the tough trainer, right? It's just not cool, but it's the way that works, and that's what's best for people. But once again, it's not sexy and it doesn't cause ratings. To say, well, over 4 years we took this person, we changed their eating habits, we had reasonable exercise, and while they didn't lose 150 pounds, they did lose 90 pounds, and they're in a decent place and they're much healthier. Does that sound like something that could be sold on a television show?
Probably not.
So
only I think it would be me, you, and Ryan watching.
Exactly. So, but that's true. And we see that with the fitness industry in general, that it's, the sexy answer, the flashy way, the extreme method that sells, because people don't want to hear it's gradual, it's not easy, but it's something that has to be done over time with planning, and consistent activity, right? And consistent action and, making the right decisions, right? That just doesn't sound cool.
No, and
people
don't
want to hear that.
It's also harder. And people don't
want
to hear that either. That it is so much harder to change your habits than to do something extreme for a short period of time.
Absolutely.
It's very, very challenging. If you think about little basic things, like maybe you're not good at flossing your teeth, like to remind yourself every day to floss your teeth because your dentist told you that if you don't do this, you're going to get, say, gingivitis or something.
Sure.
Those little things, it's hard.
Absolutely.
Until you make it habit.
And
you have to also put a value on
patterns.
It. Yeah. Yep. I mean, so that's a whole other thing. But the reason why I brought that up was because they're finally actually are doing studies on those extreme cases and finding that their basal metabolic rate significantly adapted and decreased. You have to remember, we are humans, we're mammals. Our bodies were meant for survival.
Sure.
So it goes into that survival mode and compensates for the lack of energy it was being provided. And therefore, what they were originally doing, the calories they were burning, the calories they were taking in, it's not enough anymore.
Sure.
And then it's really hard to go below a certain point. Like at what point can you actually go below a certain calorie intake or actually spend as many hours on exercise? Once again, not long-term, not lifestyle, not sustainable.
Not sustainable.
So
you mentioned this sort of lack of good bacteria and this bad bacteria that is formed because of poor eating habits. Now, what about the good bacteria? How can we get this better good bacteria? I know I have one other little magic pill, although it might actually have some validity. I hear people talking about probiotics all the time. Something that can help? Or what about just having a good diet?
Yeah, so studies do support supplementation of probiotics when necessary. So that's for a doctor to decide. Okay. And the improvements people are once again, that's the supplementation of probiotics is relatively new. But the food sources of probiotics I can definitely help with. And I would say if you're considering taking a probiotic supplement.
Wait, so are you pro or antibiotic? Sorry, I couldn't resist.
I'm super probiotic. But also, I was just going to say, if you are someone who had recently been on an antibiotic or frequently has to take antibiotics, maybe you frequently get sinus infections or UTIs or, there's a bunch of different reasons why people have to go onto an antibiotic. And if you think about, it's frequently prescribed for us from like childhood to as we get older.
I actually had to be on an antibiotic. I had a tooth removed.
Yes.
It messed up my stomach for a few days.
And that's what happens. Yeah, it's basically what it's doing. It's killing the good bugs. It's killing the bad bugs that obviously are causing the infection, but it's, or preventing some people. And that's another thing too. doctors will do it as a prevention, which is important. And you obviously don't want additional complications. So it is a safety net. But at the same time, once they're destroyed, it's killing the bad bacteria to get rid of the disease or infection. But it's also killing the good bacteria. So we have to replenish that. And I am so excited because today's world, like, everyone is like probiotics, and it's all like easily acceptable. Whereas before, it probably the basic things that you would think about with probiotics would be yogurt.
Yeah.
But now really fun. I don't care if they're fads because they're good for you. So like fun fads are fermented teas called have you ever heard of kombucha?
Yes.
Yeah. So kombucha, basically through the fermentation process of that tea, it uses a healthy very bacteria,
trendy.
Sugar. Yeah. It's super trendy.
Like a $15 bottle of something in the thing.
I just bought mine. It was $6. Okay. It was actually a pretty good deal, but still like, yeah, that's the thing. It's like you're getting a drink for $6.
Well, it makes you happy.
Yeah. But
it makes you healthy.
Yeah.
Once again, probably yet another Eastern thing that they knew for like thousands of years and we're just sort of figuring out now.
Yeah. And I know places where you can get it for like $2.50. Sure. It doesn't have to be $6, but depends on location. New York City
has a nice ring to it. Kombucha sounds healthy.
Yeah. So it's a fermented tea, and you can definitely taste when something's fermented. Think of something like sauerkraut. Sauerkraut is fermented. That has the good bugs in it. Basically, over a period of time, it has the opportunity for bacteria to grow. So to make kombucha, it takes time. To make sauerkraut or pickled beets or pickles, right? That takes time to ferment. So that fermentation process is what's creating that good bacteria.
Eating pickles have good bacteria?
It does. Hmm. Yeah. And obviously, unless you have high sodium, like high blood pressure, you know, you could have pickles and that could be something you could add. Now, I think I always have to warn people because it's the dietitian in me, but that doesn't mean, you know, drinking pickle juice, right? It just means like, let's snack on a pickle with our sandwich or let's have sauerkraut on top of our healthy hot dog instead of, you know, maybe without the sauerkraut, like just
on top
little
of our tofu dog.
Yeah, there you go. You know, have a yogurt for breakfast or as a snack or add it into a smoothie.
That's what I do.
Soy tofu that has the probiotics in there. That's a nice way to kind of add those in.
Now, what about just having a nice, balanced, healthy diet? Does your body produce the good bacteria?
Well, if you think about it, right, if these studies are true, which most of them are showing that they are, right, and you're eating that healthy diet, you're supporting the natural way that your body's supposed to be. So you're going to have more of those good bugs. You're probably, if you're having a healthy diet, you're probably having more whole grains and more fiber, which basically studies are showing that your body is utilizing what it needs and excreting the rest. So when it has those whole grains in there. Then you're probably, if you're having a healthy diet, you're less likely to overeat or undereat, which is usually what's what affects the metabolism.
Awesome.
Yeah. So, I'm trying to think if there was anything else I wanted to talk about the metabolism. Obviously breakfast is important. Mm-hmm. You guys know when you're sleeping, your metabolism, goes into that, basically it's conservative mode, right? If you're trying to conserve calories and you're resting. So in order to get out of that mode to pick the metabolism up, you have to get it started in some way. So that's why eating breakfast is important. And last thing I did want to talk about is stress. Because when you're stressed out, your body secretes hormones that prevent weight gain or prevent weight loss, contribute to the metabolism. And if it's repeated, at first, like those hormones are working in your favor, but if you're continuously stressed out, those hormones actually are going to go against you.
That actually makes sense. So if you're stressed, your metabolism shuts down, means more fat storage,
exactly.
Weight loss.
Yeah.
No bueno.
Yeah. Insulin resistance, all that stuff. So, really you know, interesting stuff. Yeah, I'm going to, like I told you before, I'm going to put
those studies in the show notes.
Yeah. So, you guys are going to find that whenever I put studies, they're always from a specific magazine that I read that's specifically for dietitians.
That means everyone else won't be able to read it if it's specifically.
No, you will, but I just wanted to say, like, if you have questions about how to interpret that information, please reach out to me. But overall, it's a great, great site because it's basically RD's.
What's the name of the site?
Today's Dietitian.
Okay.
todaysdietitian.com, and basically I get the magazines and that's where I get most of my information from. And then they link their
And of course, they are referencing various studies.
Yeah, so it's usually an RD, a registered dietitian, reporting on multiple studies that they themselves researched, but from credible sources.
Right.
Because we have a scope of practice that we have to follow, and we're not going to just be getting our information from random places. There's specific areas that we go to get our scientific evidence.
Awesome. Well, I think this was a fantastic conversation about metabolism. I'm sure that you guys out there might have some questions, so please write in. Of course, there was just a lot there, a lot to digest.
You're so witty.
well, on the show. Right? All right. Well, you guys know where to reach us. Please write in, questions for me and Ryan and for Tony as well. We love to answer them. We love to communicate with you guys. So I'm Justin Guild, a.k.a. Chef Sonic.
And I'm Tony Marinucci, a.k.a. Tips with Tony, your registered dietitian.
We are the Gymwits.